Thanks for joining us on the NRT Now podcast, part of the largest Christian music site online, newreleasetoday.com. Sit back and relax as we chat with your favorite artists, introduce you to new artists, and more. Now here's your host, Jake.
Welcome to episode 48. We're just so glad that you're here spending time with us. Man, we are so close to hitting that episode 50 milestone, and we're excited to hit that, and we believe that there have been a lot of awesome conversations previous, and we believe that there's going to be a ton of awesome conversations ahead of us. But before we get to episode 50 and that milestone, we have a couple of awesome episodes ahead of us here. So this week, our guest is Hope Darst. And if I'm honest, I had heard the name and I knew she sang Peace Be Still, but I had no idea what her story was behind her. And I'm not sure if you're in the same boat that I am with that, but that's all going to change here in just a minute. But something that really struck me as I was having this conversation and re-listening to this conversation was something that Stephen McWhorter said quite a while ago. And I don't even remember what episode that was now. But he talked about when something's really important and when God has something for you to hear, he repeats it and repeats it and repeats it. And God's timing is something that I think has come up quite a bit on this podcast so far. Micah Tyler and his album, I believe that released in March. That was a good example of that. We've heard that several times across just this 50 episodes, or almost 50 episodes. So I don't know what that looks like for you. I don't know if this is something that you need to hear, if this is something that's speaking into you. But that's something that's been repeated over and over to me. And that's no different with Hope's story. There's a lot of be obedient and wait for God's timing in her story. So without further ado, here's the conversation with Hope Darst. Hey, so we have Hope Darst joining us. Thanks for taking some time here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's such an honor, and I'm such a huge podcast person. Like, I love podcasts, so it's always, like, such a, like, honor and dream to get to go on a podcast.
Well, we're honored to have you. So, I guess with that question, what is your favorite podcast right now, besides this one here?
Besides this one, well, of course, obviously. This is my favorite podcast. I won't name podcasts. I'll just say I'm very into true crime podcasts.
Oh,
I really like them. I love, like, digging deep into, like, unsolved cases, like, real cases that are unsolved, and, like, listening and, like, letting that get unpacked and kind of just feeling, like, in my mind, like, I'm a detective and, like, I can figure this out. I don't know. I'm just super intrigued by it. But then I really love, I don't know, like, some of the women on your podcast might know it, but Havilah Cunnington, she's, like, a really great author and speaker, and she's one that I listen to a lot, too, but I do. I have this weird thing with crime podcasts.
So did you also read Nancy Drew when you were younger as well?
I totally did. My dad always said when I was a kid, he's like, if you don't go into music, he's like, I could see you going into some kind of, like, law or law enforcement where it's, like, a lot of dealing with unsolved crimes and helping bring justice and all that kind of stuff. So that would have been fun to me in another life.
So there's a couple podcasts that I know maybe that you're running down that range, but There's a different kind of feel to different podcasts, and it's just amazing. Yes. Just the breadth, because what I'm normally drawn to is the more conversational, like when it gets overproduced and over.
I don't like that.
And it's a program.
I really love the ones when there's more than one host and they're actually, like, having, like, a real conversation like this about the case, and they're really talking about it from, like, how their viewpoint could be or what they're seeing with the evidence and how they're really, like, looking at it in, like, a holistic kind of picture, because they're not related, like, especially if they weren't a part of the case and they're able to kind of like lay out all the evidence and go, why didn't they go down this path, or did they ever like circle back to this? And I don't know, I find that so much more real and more intriguing than, yeah, the overproduced ones, I kind of lose interest really quick.
It almost seems like they're replicating the old school radio programs.
Yes, like almost like back like when my grandmother would listen to like a radio show where like there was characters and there was a story and there was like a plot and dialogue, you know, like a script that was written. And there's nothing wrong with that. People love that. I'm more drawn to the kind of off the cuff banter that's real, and they're just talking like to people that think that they're cops when they're not.
I remember this old radio series, and some of these podcasts remind me of it. It's talking about the old lighthouse. I think it was Unshackled. That was the program back in old school Christian radio.
I don't think I ever heard that.
Man, I don't remember where it was from. It was stories from Mission, and I think it was Chicago, if I remember correctly. I'm going to have to look this up now.
I know. There's another one that's not, it's not crime, but if you ever want like a great podcast on like leadership, Banning Leibcher, he has a fantastic podcast that like just really talks about leadership skills and just navigating people. But because he's a pastor, I think you like expect it to be like all serious and just like very just conservative serious, but he's actually quite funny and has like good banter and like it can make fun of himself. And like, I don't know. I've kind of been drawn to his as well.
Yeah. Unshackled, Pacific Garden Mission in Chicago. So I was mostly right.
Yes. Well, I'll tell off air later. I'll tell you all my favorite crime ones.
Yeah. Oh man. So we were just talking a second ago that there's a lot going on in the Darst household. You know, you have house guests, we have everything going on with the pandemic and just a big batch of crazy going on for you guys.
Got a big batch of crazy going on in our house. That is so for real. 2020. I knew 2020 was going to be maybe one of the craziest years for us. And then the pandemic happened. So like that is like tipped us over the edge. Cause like back at the top of the year, I signed a record deal, which is crazy. If anyone's probably no one's heard my story, quite frankly, cause no one knows who I am. But I'm 39. I turned 40 this year. And twice before in my life, I attempted to go down a career path to become an artist. And both times God said no. And I had to make a choice to like either pursue that passion and honestly be in disobedience or pursue God's presence and be obedient. And by the grace of God, I both times chose to be obedient and pursued God's presence over it. And so fast forward many, many, many years, I was like just a stay-at-home mom, a songwriter on the side every now and then, and someone who served in our church, led worship, and was like just committed to honestly meeting people where they were, whether it was through pastoral care, like just serving at our church. Because I was also on staff at a church for 10 years, but in this last 7 years, I wasn't on staff, and I was just really focused on being at home with my kids, really digging deep into like the journey of healing and freedom in my own life and my own heart through, honestly, through worship, through pastoral care, through counseling, through whatever that looked like. I just really wanted to spend a really long season committing to that so that whatever I did for the rest of my life, that I was operating more out of wholeness and freedom versus kind of limping through things. And so I really did not expect in any capacity that God would ever circle me back to that dream that I had walked away from twice. I really had surrendered that thing and like buried that thing and killed it and then strangled it again just to make sure. And so when kind of like 2018 and 2019 came around and God was just like overwhelmingly reiterating the same message that he wanted me to step out and to actually maybe go down this path again. At first I was like, I don't feel like that's the Lord. I'm like, you've been really clear twice before. Like, why would you change your mind now? But it was, God just would not relent. Like I was just getting confirmation after confirmation. People would just call me out of the blue and just would like, or text me, or I would meet a friend for lunch and they'd be like, I had a dream about you last night. And like, I could not shake it. And I feel like God wants me to tell you whatever it is that he's asking you to do, you're supposed to say yes. And this was happening over and over and over to the point that it was like, are there cameras in our house? Like what's happening? And so I eventually was like, okay, God, like, I'll do what you ask. But this just feels crazy. Like, it doesn't make sense. But I stepped out in faith and recorded Peace Be Still, which is a song that had come out 4 years earlier on, or I guess 3 years earlier. I don't even know time anymore. What is time?
COVID timing. We'll say it was COVID a month timing. Ago.
We'll see. You know, you guys can look it up. I don't know the actual dates. But our church released a record, The Belonging Company, that I'm part of here in Nashville. And Peace Be Still was the song on that album. Lauren Daigle sang the song. The song went out into the worship community and really exploded in the worship community and among churches. And when once it was out and it happened, like, I was moved on. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm a mom. I'm writing other songs. Like, my life is just still moving forward. So when it started to come back through different courses of events and different people, and honestly, just in my own, like, life, like, just spending time with the Lord, I just felt like God kept saying, I have more territory for this song, which didn't make any sense to me, honestly, because I was like, how does it have more territory, Lord? Like, it has millions and millions and millions of streams. Like, I don't know what more territory you're talking about. And I just couldn't shake it. And I had several friends that felt like God was saying the same thing to them. And one of those was my co-writer, one of the co-writers on the song, Mia Fields. And she just called me one day and she just said, Hope, I cannot shake that God keeps saying this song is meant to go to radio. And she's like, several people have thought that they were going to take it to radio and it's just fallen apart every single time. And she's just like, I just feel like God has actually called you to be the one to take it to radio. And I remember just laughing on the phone and being like, Mia, that's ridiculous. I'm not an artist. I'm not even a signed songwriter. Like, what are you talking about? Nobody just goes, I'm just going to record a song and it's just going to go to radio. I was like, what are you talking about? And she's like, I don't know. She's like, I feel this like so overwhelmingly that you're supposed to step out in faith. And I fought it and fought it and fought it for months, like legit fought it. And eventually I just felt like God said, just trust me. Like, just go record the song. Just record the song. And so I was just like, okay, God, well, I just want to know that your presence is on it. Like, if I'm going to go record a song, I could care less about somebody hearing my voice on it. There's an amazing, powerful version already out there. Like, if you're asking me to do this, it's got to be because your presence is going to be on it and you're wanting to do something with it that is beyond me. And long story short, that led to me signing. We recorded the song. It got in the hands of people without even us trying. Like, it literally just got into people's hands that we didn't even put it in their hands. We didn't ask for it to be sent to them, for them to get wind of it. And suddenly doors were opening that we weren't even knocking on. The longer story is that I ended up signing a record deal at the top of 2020. And we released Peace Be Still to Radio in January. And little did we know that our entire world was going to get shut down by a pandemic that has literally surfaced so much fear, so much anxiety, so much loss and disappointment and grief and death in the world at large. And suddenly this song that had never gone to radio, which is kind of crazy that it never did in a lot of ways, if you know the story behind the song, it was like God had said, but I had saved it for this moment. And I saved it for you to be the one to carry it. Because when you wrote it, you were dealing with fear and anxiety and disappointment. And you can speak directly to why you wrote it and what is the purpose and the heart behind the song. And so it's just been crazy to watch the song have a whole nother life in a territory we never dreamed of, because we get messages every single day. I've never heard the song before. Oh my goodness. This song is breathing so much peace into my life. It's silencing the voice of fear. And I'm going, how is this even possible? Like, how have people never heard the song? Not in any kind of arrogance, but just in a genuine, it had such a massive impact several years ago. You just kind of in your mind think, oh, of course people know this song. It's old. Nobody wants to hear it again. But, you know, I think the truth of this song and the promise of God's peace is just something that we never tire of hearing and something that we never tire of needing. So I signed the record deal, released that, started making a record or finishing a record in the pandemic. My husband and I, we own basically 4 local businesses. So we were trying to manage all of that, figure out how do you run that in the middle of a pandemic. Then we have people living with us. And then, you know, now as of in August, I'm now also a homeschooling mom on top of all of that. So, you know, just like everyone else, it's crazy. Every day feels like it's upside down. And some days, you know, we feel like we get a handle on it and we have like a great day. And then other days I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm failing. This is terrible. I don't know how to do this. This is too much. I want to quit it all, shut it all down. I don't care if my kids never go back to school. I don't care if I ever do music again. You have the gamut, honestly. And anyone who says that they aren't, I think they're lying. But it's been a challenging season, to say the least, I think, for everyone. But it's also a very exposing season. It really shows you where you are strong in your faith and in the Lord, and where there's some weaknesses and there's some fractures, and how to recalibrate, and how to really honestly figure out what is the main thing. Like, actually, is the main thing really the main thing in my life? Are priorities in the right order? And if they aren't, let's reset. Let's actually do some things differently. Let's don't come out of this pandemic just wanting to return back to status quo and doing everything the way that we did. God, there's a gift of goodness wrapped up in all of this, where we actually can reset our lives to be more aligned maybe with what God's actually called them to look like, so that we are able to walk in a greater level of strength and anointing and confidence and power that only comes from Him. So,
absolutely. And I'm looking at it here. Peace Be Still first came out in 2017.
Okay, yeah, that's right. So, but we wrote it in 2016.
Yeah, it's been a few years.
It's been a few years. And I think, honestly, when I recorded it, I just kept thinking, other than just I want the presence of God to be on this song, and it to help bring people into a moment where they feel the peace of God. But I was also just a little bit like, as long as my mom likes it, and my husband likes it, I'm being so serious when I say, I didn't have the vision for all this. That was not in my mindset. That wasn't in the horizon for me. I was really just trying to make sure I was just hearing God's voice and that I was doing the next thing that God asked me to do. And it was just, so I kept saying yes and yes and yes and yes and yes. It has led me to now releasing a full record and being incredibly proud of it. Because for me, like, I've tried to explain to people, like, for me, the miracle of it all is that I just got to do the thing that I had dreamed of doing my whole life. To some degree, like, it doesn't really matter to me if people end up loving it or not. Like, I know that sounds terrible, and don't tell my label.
We'll edit that part out for copy that we give them.
The miracle of my story is that I twice set out to do this and God asked me not to. And that somehow, in the craziestness of my own fallacies and my own failures, I still chose to do what God asked me to do. And to now, all these years later, God to circle that back. It is such a story of surrender and obedience, and that faithfulness honestly does plant seeds in your life where God can then do things that you didn't expect, but do them in a way that through your life, He's the one that's seen and not you. You know, if I had made a record either one of those other times, it would have been to make sure that I was known, to make sure that I was validated, to make sure that I was the thing that you walked away loving when you listened to my record. And now I've made a record that I actually hope you don't see me. I hope you don't walk away going, she's an amazing singer and I just think she's so cool. If that's all you walk away from, then I failed. Because actually what I care about is that this record breathes into your spirit and into your heart and into your mind and creates a space where you actually can, like, take a deep breath and let the power of God come into wherever you are, your room, your car, your house, your workplace. I don't care. And you actually feel the presence of God and you experience what I have experienced in the presence of God, which is radical healing and transformation. I've experienced God actually speak to the deepest places of my heart and lead me into places of real healing through Jesus and real freedom. And that's all I care about on this record. That's all I want for people to experience. And that would not have been my motivation all those years ago. You know, and I needed 20 years of God hiding me and correcting me and rewiring me and pastoring me and parenting me to where in this season where I'm not as hidden, He is the thing that you see the most.
It's crazy. It's come up several times on this podcast through this pandemic season, through this COVID season, where this was recorded in 2017, and I'm with you. It's really surprising how few people have heard Peace Be Still because it was on a Belonging Co. worship record.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lauren Daigle sang it way back when.
Yes, but if you didn't know the belonging, you wouldn't have found it. Like, you would have either had to been, like, a massive Lauren Daigle fan that was, like, digging deep, 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 or you had to know the belonging company. But if you didn't know either, it really was a song that you could have easily not heard, which was crazy to me because I live in the worship world. That's where I've been. I've been a worship leader for the last 20 years. So in my mind, everyone had heard this song, right? Like, because in the worship community, most people had. So yeah, it is just, it's mind-blowing. I mean, literally this morning I woke up and I had probably multiple messages of people just saying, I heard your song for the first time yesterday on radio and it's changed my life. Or, oh my gosh, I'm in the hospital and I have a loved one that's sick and all I can do is play this song on repeat and I only heard it last week, you know. And you realize the power and the impact of songs that I think every now and then there's just certain ones that God just, honestly, he just breathes on and you don't know why, but you know that there's a promise and there's a truth tucked into that song that is absolutely meant for very specific times and then throughout time. Like, the message just, it doesn't go away.
Yep. And just also the release time. Like, so there's been several artists that we've had on the podcast in the last few months that they wrote the songs last year, a couple of years ago, whenever that was.
Right.
And all of a sudden now we're facing release in the midst of this crazy season. The message is just so pertinent to what we're going through. Where at the time it was still relevant to them.
Yeah.
But
I think it's really important for songwriters. Look, I can't speak to everyone's journey and how they songwrite, but I'll just say for me personally, it never works for me to just go into a room and be like, let's write a great song today. I think that that misses the heart, especially in the worship community, I think, and in a faith-based community. Not that there's anything necessarily wrong with that, but I think that that can lead you into a real cycle of just kind of phoning it in. And I think the things that people are desperate for, whether they realize it or not, they are desperate for an encounter with the living God. And throughout history, God has used music and worship to be one of those vehicles that does that. I mean, Jesus, you know, God in heaven is sitting at a throne surrounded by worship 24/7. He could have chosen to surround himself by something else, right? Yep. Prayer, confession, silence, I don't know. But he chose worship. So there is a reason that he uses it as a conduit to actually bring us into the throne room of heaven and to bring us past the veil, which Jesus has torn on our behalf, so that we can enter into the Holy of Holies and be transformed. Literally see him face to face, not physically here on earth, but see and sense him face to face. And it actually changes us, just like Moses on the mountain, like literally be changed by the presence of God. And so for me as a songwriter, when I'm walking into a time that's set aside to write, I'm on my face asking God to help me write from revelation and from presence and from the power of the Holy Spirit. I'm not interested in just writing a good song for the sake of writing a good song that day. Like, I just feel like that can fall flat on the floor. And I think as songwriters, and we have to be willing to go in the room and press in for nothing more than to encounter Jesus. And if all I walk out of the room that day is with just, I got on my face and I wept before God and we felt Jesus enter the room and there's no song, great. That's still a successful day. That's still an important day. And I think what I've done is I've just chosen that that's the goal every single time. And if sometimes God downloads something that feels true in a song that I can then bring into a larger platform and offer it to my church or put it on a record, then that's amazing. But the goal isn't just to be some great songwriter. Like, I actually want to be a conduit of the presence of God. And I think that that's what holds weight. And people sense it. They know the difference. People feel, I feel it. I feel the difference between a song that's just a great song and a song that stops me dead in my tracks and recenters me with the power of God and the glory of God and does something transformational in my heart and my mind. And that's what I'm after. There are a million people that are going to write great music that just feels really good and is awesome. And I love those people and I'm grateful and I own their record. So I'm not criticizing that. Like, don't hear what I'm not saying, because there are people that are called to just go make great music and to step into arenas and platforms where they can be the light of Jesus through their life, and maybe not necessarily through their art or their job or their craft, but through the life that they live. But I'm just personally called to write in a way that is very much centered on creating creating moments and experiences where you actually can worship your way into a moment with God and have an encounter with God that changes your life.
Yep. And I think there's all methods. I think you covered that there. There's people that can just walk in and it's like, hey, this is fun. It's a good upbeat poppy music.
Exactly. And that is a gift in of itself.
Yes,
and so I want to clarify, I didn't mean to criticize that. I was really just speaking from a worship leader's perspective of songwriting, which I think is different. I think our mandate and our goal is very different than the person that goes in to just write really encouraging, uplifting songs that you can just listen to and still keep your mind and your heart meditated on things that are good and pure and noble and lovely. Yep. That really is important. And I don't want to paint a different picture. I just wanted to kind of paint the picture for songwriters that really live in the worship community. I think we have a different call on why we write and what we should write.
Yep. Everybody has different gifts. And I'm
very
convinced of that. Some people have that gift to just do the pop music. Some people
have
that gift of telling a story and inviting someone into the presence of God.
I have beautiful friends they sit in both spaces. They will sit over here and they'll sit in the worship space, and they understand the goal there. They understand the heart there, but then they also are like phenomenal pop writers. And what they're able to do in that community is not necessarily preach Jesus in their songs, but they still carry the anointing. They still carry the presence of God. Like, I have this one friend that wrote a song called Cover the Earth, and she was singing it out in like just like a dive, you know. She's not a Christian artist, and a girl walks up to her at the end and she says, "I don't understand your song." She's like, "I felt like a spirit on it." And my friend was like, "Yeah, that's called the Holy Spirit," you know. Like, nice. So there is such a platform of it. And who knows? Like, there may be one day that God's like, "Hope, I want you to go write a pop song over here, or I want you to go sit in this genre." And I want to be able to do that and still carry the presence of God into anything that I do. That's whether you work in an office building or you write songs or whatever. But for me personally, songwriting as a worship leader, I know what it's like to get caught in the trap of just wanting to write a worship song so it gets in the church, versus writing a worship song because you actually want to see lives and people encounter Jesus. And those are really, like, it could be a fine line between what's motivating you and what's actually like driving that.
Just a little bit earlier, you're talking about not many people have heard your story. You know, I'll just say you're the Peace Be Still gal.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. And then, you know. kind of.
But, yeah, I mean, I think it's, most people, the normal, I think, kind of journey is like you put out several songs before you put out a record. But the truth is, I'd been writing this record for the last 7 years. So it wasn't like, I mean, when I went in and signed with Fairtrade, we pretty much had all of the record written. I think we wrote Promise Keeper, The Hope of Jesus, and Start Over. Those are the only three songs that we wrote post signing my record deal. So everything else I had written and had, like, kind of came into the label and said, these are the songs that I really believe are meant to be on a record, and they got behind them immediately and were like, absolutely, we totally agree. And we weren't even sure like what it would turn into. You know, we're like, is it going to be an EP? Is it going to be an album? Like, we were just really open. But the more we started digging into it, there was enough collection of songs that we were so close to a full record that it just made the most sense to just kind of go see if God would just honestly dump some new songs into our heart and our spirit. And that's where Promise Keeper, Hope of Jesus, and Start Over came. They were much later in the process of making the record.
That's so cool. And I really want to dig into your story a little bit. I love what the press release that I got said. God took you in circles. And then when he took you in circles, then he took you in a straight line. And
Zig, when you should zag, you know. Oh, my gosh. It's been quite a journey. I mean, I kind of hinted at it earlier. Like, I turned 40 this year. And, you know, who signs their first record deal at 40? Like, it just, it's not the typical journey. I have two children. They're 11. They're 9. I'm deep into, like, mom life. I celebrate my 15 year anniversary tomorrow with my husband.
And, wow.
You know, it's just not the typical entry point. It just really isn't. And even more so for women, just to be quite honest. It's a challenging enough thing to be a working mom. Mm-hmm. And I think most people kind of don't necessarily start work at this phase. You know, they've kind of figured out earlier on, I'm going to be a working mom or I'm not going to be a working mom. And I've done it all. I started out as a working mom and then I came off and then I was a stay-at-home mom and now I'm a working mom again. And so it's just been an interesting journey. But I think the biggest thing was kind of what I was talking about earlier. My mom always joked, like she says, you sang before you talked. I just came out the womb singing. She prayed that I would sing when she was pregnant with me. And boy, did that prayer come true. Like, I think there were many days that she regretted that when I was just singing around the house, annoying all of my family. And, you know, my brothers were like, shut up, quit singing. You know? Awesome. But, you know, by the time I was 19, I genuinely just thought I'm going to be an artist. Like, I grew up in the era, I mean, I'm an 80s baby. So I grew up in the era of massive vocalists, you know, like Mariah Carey, Whitney Houston, Celine Dion, Annie Lennox, Christina Aguilera, that's Kelly Clarkson. Like, that's just what I knew. And I just assumed that's what I was going to do. I was a good singer. So, of course, that's going to be the path for me. And God's just going to make all my dreams come true. But by the time I was 19, like, I was saved. I grew up in a believing home. And so I had, you know, prayed the prayer of salvation. I knew what that meant. But I was really struggling. I mean, pretty much from like 11, 12 to 19, I really struggled with identity and self-hatred. I, you know, at various points, really, really battled with depression and eating disorder. Like, I just was really saved, but not definitely not free or understanding what the what an abundant life looked like. At 19, I was in a really, really dark place and moved to Nashville for the summer to live with friends because I just knew, like, I'm not in a good place and I don't really know how to get to a healthier place. And they were really strong believers. They opened up their home. They said, just come live with us for the summer. You just have to go to church with us one time. And of course, I wanted to be true to my word. And so I went on a Wednesday night to this church and I sat on the back row of a pew. And a gentleman began to preach a message that it changed my life. It legitimately brought me to an awareness of that I was saved, but I actually had never really made Jesus Lord of my life. I didn't know what it meant to like live and breathe and have your being in him, to make your decisions based on your love for him and to honor him. And all of my life up to that point had just been like, I want someone else to love me. I want someone else to, you know, define me and make me feel valuable and make me feel wonderful, which I think even some of my desire to be an artist was that. It was rooted in that I want to be something special and I want people to love me and I want people to think I'm wonderful and amazing. And that will give me the value that I'm so desperate for. And it caused me to make decisions along the way where I really forfeited my value and forfeited my character and forfeited my mind and spirit. And so at 19, I was like, okay, Jesus, I am all in. Like, you have my whole life, my whole heart, everything. You know, at that point, I still think I'm supposed to be an artist. Like, I don't question it. I just think, of course, well, now I'm just going to do it. And, you know, and even more so, it's going to happen because now I'm really sold out to Jesus. And it just never happened. Like, I was always near it. I was always around it, but the doors just never opened fully. And I think some, if I look back now, I don't even know that I was really pursuing it fully. Like, I think there was a little bit of me that just kept thinking, it'll just happen. Like, I don't have to put that much effort in, right? Someone's just going to hear me sing and be like, here's a record deal. You know, just arrogant and just unaware of real life. And fast forward, I get married. I'm 25. And I spent that, like, the next 6 years of my life really trying to figure out, like, how do you live a life that really honors God and you really do what he asks you to do, no matter what that looks like, no matter how hard or easy that is. And when I was 25, I'd been traveling like as a background singer and a road manager and a studio singer. And so I was, again, really near the whole thing, but it didn't happen. I came off the road and we were in Texas and we were driving to see my in-laws and I'm in the car and I just burst into tears and my husband's like, what's wrong? And we were newlyweds. We were literally like 2 months married and I'll never forget. He's like, do you regret marrying me? And I was like, no. I was like, I love that I married you. You're the best decision I've ever made. Still is. But I remember just, it came out of my mouth and I just said, I am grieving the death of a dream. I can feel like God is asking me to walk away from this lifelong dream. I just don't know what to do. I don't have a plan B. I don't have a backup. I dropped out of college. I don't even have a degree. Like, I can't even just go get like a career. I'm going to have to really reevaluate what my entire life is and what it's built on and why I'm here and what purpose does God have for me? Because I'm like really certain that God's saying, this is not the path I have for you. And are you willing to surrender it? And it was devastating. Like, I was like really grieving and really sad and like had to acknowledge in that moment, okay, I could just ignore this voice and just be like, oh, that's just a fleeting moment. Or I could lean into this and trust that if God's really asking me to do this, like it's for my best, even though it doesn't feel great right now. And that ended up leading me in, it's a long story that we don't have time for, but through a series of events, that opened the door for me to ultimately go into full-time ministry. And my local church brought me on staff and I became a worship leader and I was pastoring people and loving people and serving my church community and eventually raising a family. And I did that for over a decade. And I thought that was it. Like, it made sense to me. Like, oh, okay. The thing to like that I wanted to do, I'd put it in this one package, but God actually had a different avenue for it. And so, you know, had God not made that turn, I would never, ever have considered going into ministry as a vocation and what God really, I think deep down, had always called me to. And so for a decade, I did that. And kind of towards the end of that decade, in like around 2012, 2013, I was on staff at a church, leading every weekend, or leading all the time, traveling every other weekend, leading worship at various conferences and events, raising two small children. Wow. Like, my plate was full. At the same time, I was dealing with postpartum depression, and my parents were going through a really, really, really difficult divorce. And I was just stuffing and stuffing and ignoring and ignoring and ignoring and like just not wanting to deal with any of it. And it kind of all came crashing down. And at the top of the 2013, like I had a legit just breakdown. Like I was done. Like I couldn't function. And I was just like, God, I don't even know what I believe anymore because I'm doing everything on paper that you say I'm supposed to do to have freedom in Christ and live this abundant life. And I don't feel any of that. I feel weighty. I feel fearful. I'm battling postpartum depression. I am angry. I feel like this gospel doesn't work. I remember just being like, I don't even know if this works. Like, I'm trying the best that I can. And on paper, I'm doing everything that everyone says you're supposed to do for it to work. And I'm a wreck internally. Like, my mind is not free. My heart is not free. My soul's not free. And again, for the second time in my life, I have a profound moment with the Lord in my bedroom on the carpet of my floor. I'm laying there, I'm weeping, and I'm just like, God, I'm done. I don't know what else to do. I've done everything and I'm desperate. Will you please just meet me here? Like, show me what I'm supposed to do. And I just felt like the Lord in that moment, he said, Hope, you are saved. You love me. This isn't a question of that, but you are not free. And I came to set the captives free. And your heart and your mind are still operating like a captive. And I want to take you on a journey and I want to walk you into a season of freedom. And it wasn't even I think it was like a couple of weeks later, I resigned. I came off staff. I stopped traveling on the weekends doing conferences. And I said, I'm taking everything off the table. I don't even know what that means. I don't even know what that looks like. I just know I have to be willing to walk away from all of this and allow God to do a really deep work of healing and restoration in my heart. You know, my marriage was really suffering because I was suffering and I could see it was starting to impact my parenting. Like, it was just, it was having such a massive impact, the internal dysfunction. And so I walked away from everything. And about 6 weeks later, we ended up in the basement of some really beautiful friends who had just set aside a time once a week to just honestly get in the presence of God for nothing else than just to allow people to sit in the presence of God and allow Jesus to do what he does best, which is, I think, heal us and change us and set us free. And week after week after week, I was experiencing healing. I was actually like feeling God speak to places in my heart where I had tried everything before, every devotional, mentorship, experience, freedom weekends. And I love all those things, and they're amazing. And I think they are very pertinent and important. But for whatever reason, there was like a block in my life that those were not penetrating the places that were really broken. And in this tiny little basement with no one looking and no one telling me how to do it, I began to encounter Jesus, start to speak to those deepest places. And I would just experience phenomenal encounters with the Lord that began to untangle a lot of the webs and a lot of the confusion and a lot of the lies that I had believed. And it became this exchange of like, God would reveal something and then I would repent. And then I would feel healing and restoration come into my heart. And it just became this beautiful season of all of that. And it was out of that season that I experienced so much healing, and I slowly began to kind of lead worship in this little basement with the group of misfits that we were. You know, it was like 20 people, and that eventually led into that growing and that becoming what is my home church now, the Belonging Company. And as we grew as a church, because so many people were having the same experience that I was in their personal lives every week, we found that we didn't have language for songs that were telling the story of what we were experiencing. And so we just wanted to write songs to honestly just tell the story of what was going on in our lives and for our little community. We weren't thinking of anything beyond that. And honestly, it just grew and it grew and it grew and it grew. And simultaneously, as God was healing me and recalibrating things, the story of my life was growing and growing. And God was taking me into a place of writing songs, and that began to grow. And I remember just being like waking up one day and going, I have all these songs and I don't know what to do with them. Like I didn't plan on being a songwriter. I wasn't trying to make this happen. This was just the overflow of that season and the overflow of my life. And it just has grown and led to one thing after the other. And now in this season, I'm able to really move from what God has done and really pour out of what God has done in this last 7 years. And so it really was. It's a lot of twists and a lot of like, I think it's going forward and I think it's going to happen. And then it's 10 steps backwards and then it's redirection and then it's circling back. I mean, it really has been such a beautiful journey of surrender. And I think if I could encourage anybody, don't underestimate the power of saying yes to God asking you to do something that feels completely contrary to what you feel like is the thing that he's called you to do. Because that ultimately can lead you into the place that God does his deepest work in you that prepares you for whatever that is down the road. And then I also think there's no expiration date on the things that God has written over your life. In the natural, people would be like, "You girl, you way past your expiration date. Like this should not be happening." And yet God's like, no, this is exactly when it was supposed to happen. It's my perfect timing. I knew that my journey needed 20 years of God doing the work that he did. And for someone else, that's different. But for me, this was the journey and this was the timing of God. And maybe it's just this one song and maybe it's just this one album. And maybe next year we go, okay, we're done. That was the assignment. Cool. I'm just here to show up and just say yes and be obedient. And if God shuts it all down tomorrow, I'm going to say yes to that and be obedient to that too. And I think that that's kind of the legacy of my story across the board.
Wow. That's crazy. I mean, just so many twists and turns. And I guess one of the things that I really caught from that was you can really be plugged into doing things and leading and doing all things Christian, all that, but somehow still miss that presence and just allowing that work to really penetrate your life, even though you're studying, you're doing your devotionals, you're leading worship, you're doing all the things that you're supposed to. I think just taking that step back, especially in our culture right now, like you have to go, you have to accomplish, you have to do everything. And that's measured externally.
I think it's very easy to get caught up in the thought that like we're saved. We can easily think that salvation was it. And there's a whole other side where there is actual freedom. I think so many of us kind of unintentionally just get stuck at the salvation stopping point. And then we're frustrated when we're not experiencing the freedom that Jesus so often talks about. And I think it's because we just got stuck at that particular road sign and we didn't continue to let the journey take us into the intimacy and the vulnerability that comes with being in a relationship with Jesus that ultimately leads to freedom. And there's various reasons why we avoid that or don't experience, you know, it could be we were taught that, we didn't even know that was an option, or our past or different things cause us to close off certain parts of ourselves without even consciously knowing it. Do you know what I mean? I think it's not always an intentional thing, but what I had to confront was I'm saved, I'm not free. And if I'm actually going to be a witness and actually my life reflect the work of Jesus, then it has to reflect more than just being saved. It actually has to move to a place where I can tell the story of what God has done. I mean, I love it's by the power of our testimony that it is made known what he has done. And so I think so often we're scared if our story isn't, I was this massive story, right? Like this massive big transformation. We think the small internal miracles and transformations maybe don't hold as much weight. But honestly, I think more people live in that space of it's the actual testimony of their mind being set free from oppression and depression and anxiety and fear, or their heart being healed of unforgiveness, or anger being something that they struggle with. I think so many people struggle with anger and it's not talked about enough and it's not addressed enough, and that you actually can be set free from that. You actually can experience God come in and heal the wounds or the trauma or even just the learned behavior that led you down that path. But it takes a willingness to really, really open your whole heart and your whole life up. And that is not always the easiest thing to do. And I feel such a passion for believers, honestly, to see believers move just past and I was guilty of this, becoming a professional Christian.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like just honestly, like doing it, but it's really, I'm doing it as kind of like an input output, right? Like if I just do all of this, then I'll get all of this. That's really the wrong thinking, because that also can lead to you, well, then if I'm not doing it, I don't get anything. And that's not the heart of Jesus. The heart of Jesus is he withholds no good thing. And he has actually come to set the captives free, to heal the brokenhearted, and to make known his power and his glory in all of our lives. And I think it's not just for the unbeliever. Yeah. Well, truthfully.
Me personally, I'm more of the thinking type. There's the feelers, there's the thinkers, yeah. You know, kind of that. I'm more in that thinker camp.
Thinking, cerebral. My husband's very cerebral. Yes.
And probably the piece that I really have the hardest time with is just that connection. And when we found our church that we're at now, you asked me like 5 years ago if what church I'd be going to, and this probably would not have been on the list, because just the mentality of, like, I come from that old school, you know, the thinker, you know, the Bible, you have the, practical, the knowledge, or the, like the, you know, cerebral knowledge of it.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's, you know, that kind
which
of
is important. You have to, you have to have both. It has to be holistic. You actually have to have the actual willingness to memorize scripture and read the word and the disciplines of that. Those disciplines bear fruit. They really do. But I think what can happen is you can get caught in one or the other. You can get caught in just an emotional experience that then also causes you to be a slave to your emotions, and you don't develop a well of disciplines that can override your emotions and can tell the emotion of fear and tell the emotion of insecurity, no, like, you're not my identity, you're not my truth. And then on the flip side, you can get so heavy on the cerebral side and the law side that you miss the intimacy with Jesus and the power of relationship that comes in to gently really minister to places of disappointment, trauma, woundedness, and as honestly like a gentle friend who comes and wants to do relationship with you. And I think when you only have one or the other, you get stuck in one or the other and you don't get the fullness of what God has actually come to do for us. I always think about it a little bit like the Old Testament is really addressing external sin and external issues. The New Testament moves into the internal part of the work of salvation and the Christian's life. It's addressing the things of, like, in the Old Testament, you commit adultery and you're done, right? Like that's, but in the New Testament, it's like, but even if you think about it, you've sinned. It's helping address, you know, where the external can be that kind of cerebral, very law, very like it's ritual, it's behavioral issues. But the New Testament is really drawing in the conditions of the heart that lead to behavioral sin and those kinds of things. And so I think it's just this beautiful thing that Jesus knew. He knew, like, that you were going to be more cerebral. I'm going to be more feeler. And that all of that can still be addressed and have a place within the gospel and how we respond to Jesus. Because he's going to meet you differently. He's going to come in and reveal himself to you differently than he would to me. But the heart behind it is that we all would land in the same place, which is actual freedom in Christ and living an abundant life and being able to tell that to the people that we come in contact with in our daily lives or through our jobs or whatever we do.
I know that's part of my journey, is just to really work on that encounter. You know, like, so you do the check boxes, you do this, you serve, you whatever. My journey, that's probably the piece that I'm probably working towards the most. And yeah. If I'm honest, the disciplines probably have slacked a lot through COVID as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting. Like, you know, you would think in COVID, because of all the time we have, everyone would have just been like more and more and more. But I think it actually probably has revealed to us maybe more the reality of the current, like where we really were currently. Does that make sense? And again, I don't think God does that to shame us or condemn us. I just think he does that to reveal to us where we really are. Just kind of like when he's on the boat with the disciples and the storm's happening and they're all freaking out. And Jesus comes up and he says, why do you not have any faith? Like, you just saw me like do a ton of miracles. Like, why are you freaking out? He's not shaming them. There's no shame in what he's saying. He's just trying to reveal to them, like, hey, the storm hit and you immediately doubted who I was. So let me remind you. Let me speak to the storm on your behalf. Let me remind you of my authority. And let me remind you that you have authority to speak to the storm. And let's recalibrate your heart, because where we're going to go on the other side of this storm is there are more miracles to happen. There are more things that I want to do. And I want you to be a part of that. But if I don't show you here right now in the middle of the storm where there's some maybe weaknesses or maybe there's some little fractures in your heart that you weren't aware of, then when we get to the other side, you're not actually going to be able to partner with me to the fullness in what I've called you to do and what I want to do on the other side. And I think that's true with this pandemic. We have a responsibility to allow Jesus to actually come in and to do some recalibration and some resetting so that on the other side of this, we are actually able to breathe life and speak life into people and to bring them back to the reality of, like, apart from Jesus, this life's going to be real, real hard. Like, it just is. It's hard enough. And if you don't have Jesus at the center of it, it's going to be even more challenging. But we've got to know that we are really rooted in that, and that he's actually anchoring us, right? That he's actually our hope in the middle of the storm. And it's okay. Like, if you're finding out in this season that that isn't as strong as you thought, that you were like, my house is on a rock. And suddenly you're like, ooh, I see a little bit of sand in there. You know, there's no shame. That's the kindness of God in the journey of life, to constantly be bringing us back to, hey, this could be shored up a little bit. This actually could be strengthened a little bit more. Come with me. Let's get on the journey. Let's find out why it was weak and let's get that thing strong again.
That's so true. And 20 years later, there might be an album that comes out of the deal.
There might be. Who knows? Oh,
man. Awesome. Well, we very much appreciate you taking the time out to chat with us for a while and just tell your story. And I'm excited for everybody to hear your story.
Oh, thank you. It's such an honor. I mean, this record really is just all of that in songs. It's actually all of the fractures and all of the cracks and all of the places where there was sand, where there should have been rock, that God actually had to come in and speak to. And the journey of me having to address those things and then really choose to anchor myself in the promises of God. And every song, I hope that when people listen to them, that they actually do feel like they are able to recognize maybe where they've doubted God or where disappointment has just overwhelmed them or whatever they're facing, that suddenly they can hear their story and they can hear the honesty of those journeys. But at the end, they're left with an assurance that this God is worth you holding on to. This God is worth you pressing in and allowing into the deepest places, because he's going to be better than you thought he was. And he's going to do more than you thought he was going to do. And he's actually going to prove himself to be every bit as faithful and good as he says that he is. So yeah, that's the hope for the album, because that's been the story of my life.
Thanks for hanging out with us for this episode of the NRT Now podcast. Be sure to subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And special thanks to Neon Feather for providing our theme music. Make sure to check out newreleasetoday.com and our socials for more great content. See you next episode.